You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from Boulder, Colorado. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. And I have to say, Boulder is as beautiful and as appealing as ever. If you come here from the east, you get a view of the Flatirons, and they are magnificent. Boulder real estate prices reflect the fact that this is a great quality of life town. And it's nice to be back here. I spent 20 years in Boulder, and I'm kind of wishing I were back here.
Does it look like the stock markets are bulletproof? It doesn't seem to matter what kind of statements are made in or by the White House. The stock markets just shrug it off and continue to go higher.
Yeah, for sure. It's like good news is good news and bad news is good news. And news really doesn't matter. This market is just in a warp right now. And you see 9 days out of 10, they take it down overnight. Just ever so moderate weakness, and they just run it up every single day. I'm watching Microsoft very closely. It's a good bellwether for the market, and it just hit a target that I've had out there probably for a month at $503, and I think it was 86 cents. And so if Microsoft is ready for a little bit of a breather here, the market's going to take a breather as well. But bears should not get their hopes too high.
Now, is the U.S. Headed for a new golden age, as the president predicts?
I'm tempted to say he lucked out, but there's definitely design in all the things that Trump does. And ordinarily, the fiscal blowout that's that's really the thrust of the big, beautiful bill, it's just huge stimulus. And Trump's intention is to make up for the stimulus, whatever borrowing we're doing to stimulate, with increased revenues from everything, the tariffs to, just the tax collections, that will increase as business in the U.S. increases. But the stimulus part of it is it's a borrowing mechanism, and ordinarily that would be bad for treasuries and the dollar, but he's kind of made the game work in a different way, merely because Trump himself is perceived by the whole world as being truly in charge. This is attracting a lot of foreign capital. So we've got a good, healthy flow of money into our treasury paper, and that's, I think the bond market is bottom. So if someone asks me, well, where should I put my money, bonds are it.
Going with bonds, any particular bonds?
Well, treasuries. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really the long end of the yield curve that's going to reflect natural bullishness. Of course, there's always a lot of finagling going on with short-term rates, but I think that T-bonds have really made a price bottom, meaning that yields, which correspond inversely, are going to start heading lower.
Is gold proving to be a winner right now?
Gold's always going to be a winner. It's less than exciting now, and we go through these periods where investors treat gold like garbage. And it's particularly frustrating when I get up and I see that Bitcoin is flying and gold is kind of dying. But I don't think I'd worry. If I were a gold investor, you can continue to accumulate gold in its many forms, some of it paper, with the ETFs. And, of course, there is it's hard to beat real physical gold, but whatever gold is doing, if it looks weak on a particular day, just keep in mind that every sovereign entity with two nickels to rub together on this planet is buying gold. They're accumulating it. They're hoarding it. So at the institutional and sovereign level, gold absolutely can't miss.
The president is talking about 50% tariffs on copper. Would that slow the economy down?
I don't pay much attention to what Trump is saying about tariffs anymore. So every day, the usual idiots, the talking heads on all the TV shows and at Bloomberg are wringing their hands over this tariff or that tariff. So I wouldn't worry about copper too much. It's too big and too important a market for Trump to set artificial constraints, and it'll sort itself out. I would say that Trump isn't so, he's a smart guy, and I think that he understands that copper is a critical commodity. It's something that it's used globally for real things. So Trump will ultimately leave it alone.
What's going on with the other precious metals, palladium and platinum?
I'm not following them too closely, really. They have their own screwy reasons for going up and going down. And I guess to the extent that, platinum is industrial as well, it reflects global use. But even that's hard to get a handle on, really, because it's not just everyday. It's not just everyday fabricators are using platinum. It's a very special metal for technological use and other things. But I would say the markets there will tend to be buoyant to the extent that the global economy, at least to the extent that the U.S. is making book, is doing fine. It's kind of humming along, I guess you could say.
Is silver going to continue to be hot?
It's not hot at all, really. It's sort of a go-along metal. And because there's so much sovereign interest and institutional interest in gold, but they're really just kind of focused on gold as a hedge against geopolitical trouble, but also as a way to preserve value against currency weakness in currencies other than the dollar. So gold gets a certain respect that silver does not. And silver these days, it almost trades like base metal. It's just something that's used industrially. And of course, the gold-silver ratio got way out of whack. It went over 100 to 1, which is very historically, it's unnatural, but things will sort themselves out. And when gold gets, when the precious metals get immersed in a more radical and extreme move, I think silver will lead gold higher. It is the poor man's metal. And of course, there are a lot more poor mans in this world than there are rich mans. And so silver will have its day, but just not now.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what are the positives from Trump's big, beautiful bill?
Well, it's just fiscal stimulus up the wazoo, something for everybody, and of course I mean that in the worst possible way, but the idea is that for the cost of stimulus, you're essentially talking about borrowing at all levels, not just the federal level. The idea is that there will be corresponding offsets in revenue, and that would come from every source, such as tariffs and additional tax growth, but the good kind where tax receipts are higher simply because American business is doing better. So that's what Trump is hoping for. But I think really there's a mismatch there in time, because some of the things, Trump's, his ideas are all really good, but it's going to take years before we have reshored enough American manufacturing that it becomes significant to the tax picture, let alone the jobs picture. It's going to happen, but it's going to take a while. So I think Trump is counting on the benefits of some of his policies to kick in significantly earlier than they actually will. So we're going to have that gap in the middle there that could be the source of any recession that's coming. But so it's really his plan for getting from here to there is a good one. Part of it also involves remonetization of the dollar, and that's a very interesting idea. It doesn't get reported much by Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal because they don't have any reporters smart enough to understand it or even think it's something, but it is. The idea that the U.S. should capitalize its assets and borrow against them to get, let's say, a restructuring to the student loans, for instance. You know, you might look at our gold reserves, assuming they're still there in Fort Knox. You might think of the gold reserves as something that we could use to pay off the student loans, or certainly restructure them so that we don't wind up in a position of saying, as Biden did, that the best route was forgiveness of whatever it was, $1.8 trillion, even though I see the figure 1.6 pop up. I think it's probably higher. So anyway, this idea of the U.S. borrowing against assets is very interesting. It gets a little bit dangerous, though, because part of Trump's idea is that we've got, I can't remember what the number is, maybe $31 trillion worth of home equity. And the idea is that the federal government borrows against the value of your home and basically takes out a home equity loan. And in some ways, that's not a bad idea. We do have a lot of capital tied up in residential real estate, and it sounds kind of crazy to me, but I think that if they came to you and they said the government wants to take out a loan on your home, and we're going to pay you interest on that, but we're also going to put there'll be a tie to gold. So in other words, when you cash out, when you close out the loan, or the government closes it out, you would get part of what was coming to you in gold. It would be guaranteed at the beginning of this contract. But if the remonetization in that way were tied to a gold certificate, even I could be maybe persuaded to do it. But the problem is that there is a downside, and if the government's going to borrow against the equity in our homes, it's borrowing against an asset that is so hugely pumped that a collapse in real estate, and to me that's inevitable. We're going to have a residential collapse that corresponds to the one we're having already. That hasn't been, the write-off has not been taken, but we're in a commercial real estate depression that's unacknowledged, but that will at some point suck residential real estate into the deflationary black hole. So there is the pitfall of the government trying to remonetize the dollar with some borrowing against home equity.
I know in Canada there are continued rumors that the federal government plans to tax home equity here, which I'm sure would have a lot of seniors upset.
Well, they'll have to structure it really so the seniors get some sort of cash out of it that supports their lifestyle, such as it is. But it's not a bad idea in theory, but again in practice, to the extent that the Canadian model, of course, would certainly be eager to capitalize all that Vancouver real estate where you live. And that would be getting into as pumped up a market as you could find.
What areas of the economy worry you right now?
All of them, because it's all fake. I say that, but I know I'm in Boulder, and there's a lot of, let's say, high-tech activity that's really impressive. I've got an investment in a company that has a technology. They use terawave spectrum to detect the presence of pathogens in food and water and things like that. So I see the really creative ferment that's going on, a lot of things happening. But, you know, the offsets, like look at the car industry for one. I see the car industry is on its way out. The U.S. may not, even with 100% tariffs on Chinese EVs, they're going to figure out a way to sell an electric vehicle for $8,000. That's just coming. So when you talk about Ford Motor and GM being on the downhill slope of their life cycle, which have been on for a while, but I think we're more getting toward the climactic stage. And even the EV itself, I see a lot of EVs winding up as paperweights or sitting in landfills because of the problem of fixing them. Nobody wants to work on collision-damaged EVs. I'm just not a believer in the EV. I think there are too many problems to solve. So in that sense, America's industrial base, there's nothing very promising on the jobs front. Even though over many, many hundreds of years, it was demonstrably true that each new creative destruction thing that came along, whether it was the horseless carriage or whatever, it created more jobs than it destroyed. That's not true. I have no imagination of any. I don't think that can happen this time. I think that the whole the force that is impelling AI is almost 100% devoted to putting people out of work. That's really what's giving it its appeal to the trillion-dollar investors, some of the bigger companies that are all in with the AI-based economy. But the AI-based economy is really putting everybody out of work, and of course, you could finally see that it's going to put a lot of white-collar workers out of work. Young people graduating law school this summer, this June, May, are acutely aware of that because they're not getting entry jobs at some of the law firms. All the grunt work that these grads would be doing on a 5-year, 7-year track to partnership, the work isn't there. The machines do it much better, and we see that same fact playing out if not in reality yet, it's certainly imaginable. No matter what kind of white collar job you're doing, AI has got you in its crosshairs. So I don't see any promise at all in the economy, but I do see the kind of fake. We could have that Trump golden economic era, which would be a veneer, and that's why I think even Dow 100,000 is not unthinkable. We could have one last blow off based on kind of an expansion of all the delusions that are supporting the stock market now.
What happens to all the people laid off by AI?
We're going to have a depression that makes the 1930s depression looked like a picnic. There's so many reasons for that, really. If you look at the kind of demographic of the 30s, about a third of the American population was tied in one way or another to the agricultural economy. So in a way, America was kind of living off the land then. And I don't have to tell you that people in general were a lot more resourceful as to fixing things and building things. So we are, at this point, we've evolved with a distribution chain that's so fragile that half the cities would starve, really, if that distribution chain should suffer some sort of impairment, as we might have in the payment system, in the energy grid, whatever. So I think what's what really seems inevitable to me at this point is almost too horrible to imagine, especially with respect to your question, you know, what's going to happen to these people who are out of jobs? We're all going to have to pull together, and I think that that communes will be will have their revival since the 1960s era, and a particular problem, and it's going to be felt acutely as soon as a bear market happens, which it always does, is the aging baby boomer population, because there's not nearly enough productivity, there's not enough income within the millennials and Gen X, Y, and surely Z to support the baby boomers till they, you know, they get into their 90s, and we're going to have a lot of centenarians. So the only thing I can see there is that the very old, 80 years, 90, and 100, they're going to have to band together in communes, occupying the baby boomer McMansions that for which there'll be no buyers. So it's a pretty grim picture, really. But I think we'll. I have to say we'll get through it because we have to.
Rick, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
Geez, I don't know. I think really the answer is close eye on your own life, because you're really going to have to have a kind of resourcefulness that we've all that's atrophied over the years. The best place, the best source I've found for how to get ready and you know, be more, let's say, self-sustaining is my friend Charles Hugh Smith's letter, his blog of twomines.com. So he's gotten into great detail about how he is literally cultivating his garden. He doesn't say it's explicitly for that very, very rainy day, stormy day, but he's probably the best of the breed out there, a guy who sees the waste in our economy and the obsolescence that's built into pretty much everything we use. And that is certainly true for EVs that run on microchips that won't even be available. They don't stock all the chips for all these cars. So that's it. Keep a close eye on your own fortunes, and just perfect your own life.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
And thanks much for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He was speaking to us from Boulder, Colorado. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com and we'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.